Palomita, palomita, que vagas por la ciudad. Pediles a mis hermanos de la pena y la maldad que se vive acá en el norte.
Today on another edition of Flashpoints, we broadcast live from New College of California in San Francisco's Mission District. And we'll be joined by Alejandro Rey. He'll be reporting back on Zapatista activity. And he took a little motorcycle trip to Brazil. Also, Batita Martinez updates us on 500 years of Chicano history. We'll have the Labor Chorus of San Francisco. They're right here in for a sing. We're going to have Flashpoints in Espanol. I am Dennis Bernstein with my good brother and Friday co-host, Francisco Herrera. And this is your daily investigative newsletter.
Si vienen a trabajar, palomita, palomita.
Francisco Herrera, I'm Dennis Bernstein. Those voices you hear in the background are the Labor Chorus, and they're going to be singing for you. We're going to tell you the complete, full, whole name in one moment, but welcome back, Francisco. It's good to see you.
Very, very happy to be back here.
I look forward to seeing you every Friday. And
that's right. Fridays have become...
Because it celebrates we made it through another week.
Exactly. And also... it's becoming quite a good place to be able to tell the story from the streets, no? From the street level. And coming up very soon in the next few weeks, we'll be looking at... We looked at last week the issue of the laws that are being put into place in the Bayview District in San Francisco, maybe in the San Francisco Mission District, about people walking together and
the
talking together.
The gang sweep crackdown. If you get caught with two Bibles one hand, you're under arrest.
Exactly. But it really led to a whole, during the week, conversations about police misbehavior, brutality from the police, the level of attacks that are happening in the mission. So I was talking with one of the persons today that will be involved in an interview next week. And so I think we've got a mini-series developing on peace and violence in the mission, or in the urban inner cities involving authorities.
And speaking of peace and violence, I mean, of course, we have to mention that the president, sort of maybe not elected, of the United States continues to talk war as if it's going to be another... two decades. Mm-hmm. He's talking about our children's children. And everything that we said about a war for oil is certainly just that.
Mm-hmm.
A war for oil. And it's a grind-em-up situation where they've set up their bases and now they're getting ready to move back to the bases so that they can occupy...
Yeah.
The resources and control mm-hmm. the region. It's going to be another several years of multiple bloody hells. And it's so terrifying, and it's hard to imagine that this is the guy that supposedly represents the free world. You know, I've been thinking, Francisco, you know, with the kind of democracy that the United States is bringing to Iraq, they don't have enough ambulances and medicine to help them, if you will, celebrate the democracy.
Yeah, which resembles very much the town where I'm from, Calexico, where the only hospital where I was born doesn't exist anymore. And over 30 people have died in the ambulance from one town to another.
See,
because
war,
our own
war
cities
abroad,
in the United States don't have hospitals. This week is also the Latino Heritage Month. Nine countries in America... Not the Americas, in America. Nine countries in America celebrate their independence during this week. That includes Mexico on the 16th of September. So I'm very happy that in a little while we're going to be talking with Alejandro Reyes, who just came back from Mexico. And you know, in fact, this whole thing of struggle and of bases in Iraq, and really has to do with a couple of proposals or projects. No, the project of the elite, which has always had an objective of hoarding of much for the very few, and a project in this country of working people who have always struggled for the most or all of it for everybody, you know? And a perfect center, a perfect place that from the 1920s was that it was the Highlander Center. And we're happy to have here with us the Bay Area Labor Heritage Rockin' Solidarity Chorus and Vukani Mawetu, two choruses.
Korai?
Is it Korai? two choral groups that went to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the Highlander Center in Tennessee, a center that has always been one of those places where the objective of working people has been strategized, executed, and put forth since the 1920s. And so we're happy to have them with us return, and they're going to have a song with us, and then we'll go with see Alejandro.
And later on, we're going to talk to them about the Highland Center and all their work.
Woke up this morning with my mind set on freedom. Woke up this morning with my mind set on freedom. Woke up this morning.
That is the Rockin' Solidarity Chorus and Mukani Mawetu. So we will be having a little interview with two of the leaders of the chorus. Right now, we're very happy to have back Alejandro Reyes from the radio program that is part of La Onda Bajita Radio Zapatista, who just came back from Mexico and a motorcycle ride through Brazil. And we have some very interesting reporting from him. I think we'll be hearing from him later on also in La Onda Bajita, but for now, welcome back. Welcome to Flashpoint.
Thank you, Francisco. Hi, Dennis.
Welcome, Alejandro. It's wonderful to have you with us, and you've got a good brother with you here. I know.
Joining us is Antonio Sanchez also.
Antonio, welcome. But Alejandro, let's go right to the heart of the matter. One of the things that you've been doing is really tracking the whole Zapatista revolution and following the struggles that surround all that we've heard, and there's a lot going on in terms of the the disappearing of poor indigenous communities. The word is the cover story is because they want to save the rainforest. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's been going on down there?
Sure, Dennis. You know, what we're facing is a very, very scary, very dangerous situation down in Zapatista territory. There, since December, and we knew this was going to happen with the new government of Felipe Calderón. We expected there to be a change in the direction of repression and so on. What we're seeing is a very articulated government plan to destroy Zapatista resistance in their territory. And how they're doing that is aligning a number of forces, right? So what the main issue is grabbing their land, right? And in order to do this, on one hand, they're arming paramilitary groups and organizing, creating division among peasants, right? These groups who are struggling for land and trying to take away the land of the Zapatistas. At the same time, using an alliance with the federal army, with the state police to do this, and most notably with the agrarian reform. That is, the Zapatistas, when the 1994 uprising took place, the large landowners took off, right? And all of these lands, Zapatistas say, they recuperated them because they're ancient lands that belong to indigenous people. They occupied these lands, they recuperated these lands, right? But these lands they are left without a very clear legal status, right? Today what's happening is that agrarian reform is coming in, which supposedly is an organ of the government that will give land to landless peasants. Now what they're doing is they are giving this land to people that are opposed to the Zapatistas, right? And this land becomes an ejido. An ejido presumably is land that is protected for peasants and indigenous people, right? But in 1992, with neoliberal changes, these protections are no longer in effect. This land can be sold. And so what was traditionally a move to protect the land of indigenous people today is a means of allowing the privatization of this land. The government gives this land to these peasants that are opposed to Zapatistas, and these peasants in turn sell this land to large enterprises. And so one of the things that you were mentioning, this idea of protecting the environment, there is a very, very rich area called Montes Azules. It's one of the richest areas in Mexico in terms of natural resources. Two communities about 3 weeks ago were taken away entirely. All of the families were taken away. The police and the military came down with helicopters and parachuters, cut down trees so that the helicopters could land, took everybody in a very violent manner into the helicopters, flew them away.
They just took the village? They wiped
entire
down?
Two villages. The entire population was taken away.
Just gathered them up.
Gathered them up and destroyed their homes.
Then razed the village and took them away.
Six people are in jail, presumably for unlawful occupation of land, right? And the rest of the people are living under very, very precarious conditions on a former brothel, where the children are facing health problems and so on. We heard some testimonies from the people there living in very, very difficult conditions.
And now everybody's getting very ecological.
The discourse is that this is in order to save the nature of Montes Azules, which is a reserve, right? In order to be able to go in, there's a lot of economic interest behind this, and they're going in with so-called ecotourism and so on to be able to grab these resources that otherwise they can't grab when you have these communities, indigenous communities, occupying them. So there is a double discourse here that is very intelligently manipulated by the government of protecting the environment while, in fact, what you're promoting is economic interests. We went to visit a community called 24 de Diciembre, right? The history of this community is really interesting.
This is one of the communities that disappeared?
This is a different community. This is actually, you know, the problem is that this is actually happening all over Zapatista territory with two ideas. One of them is grabbing these resources, but the other one is destroying the Zapatista movement, right, by creating all of these divisions among peasants and attacking their land. This community went in 1994 in the lands that belonged to a former governor of Chiapas, a very, very brutal land owner. He fled after the 94 uprising. They recuperated this land, built their homes there, and so on. In 95, the army went in there, and they fled to save their lives. 10 years later, they go back, and they can't occupy their lands anymore because other peasant organization is there, and they've kept everything. So they go and establish themselves next door, right next to this town in unoccupied lands, right next to the army. And right now, the same people that occupied their land, that took away their lands, are now wanting to take away these lands with papers given by the government, ownership papers of the land given by the government.
Wow.
The army is pressuring. They're entirely surrounded by the army, by this hostile peasant organization, and by the state police, who is now has a very strong presence. What are the Zapatistas doing? They're sending people from several communities around there people that are not from the community itself, creating a ring of 100 people that are there 24 hours a day, protecting the, not only protecting the village, but also keeping the own villagers from losing their cool and getting into a violent confrontation. Because the Zapatistas, you know, have a very interesting quality. They are perhaps the only, first and only pacifist guerrilla movement in history, you know.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. I am here with Francisco Herrera. That is Alejandro Reyes, a wonderful, a real sort of traditional journalist, I guess you could say.
Journalist on the road.
A journalist on the road with a real journal on the motorcycle. What are some of the other issues that you're tracking in this context?
Well, we've been really worried about repression in general in Mexico. You know, there is a very definite sense of intolerance for any type of social movements, any type of resistance. We have the sex workers in Apizaco who have organized themselves and are trying to avoid the establishment of what they call a tolerance area, right? Because this tolerance area, what it entails is mafias that control the sex industry and the drug industry and alcohol and so on, including child prostitution, right? So what they're doing is they're organizing themselves and they're saying, no, we don't need anybody to come here and regulate us. We can regulate ourselves. They're creating a movement of awareness and organization among sex workers that the government sees as a threat. They went in there to their location of work. They arrested them very violently. They planted drugs in there. Now they're being accused of drug trafficking. There is the case of the independent, autonomous, indigenous police in Guerrero, which have done an incredible work of creating an alternative police force. They are now being criminalized and persecuted by the government. And there's a case of a very important journalist, Gloria Muñoz, in Mexico. She writes for La Jornada. She's been covering, she has a column that's called Los de Abajo. She's been covering these social movements. Her apartment was broken in by people from the government.
What was taken? Was anything of value stolen, or was it files rifled?
It was papers, files from Chiapas, photographs, two computers, right? And the apartment was entirely destroyed. They threw everything on the floor and so on. It was very clearly an act of intimidation. This has gotten a lot of visibility down there in the media, at least in the media on the left. But what we're worried about is that the media does not... Other types of repression that are happening all over the country are not getting this kind of attention, obviously, because people from way below don't have the networks to be able to, you know, to denounce these kind of things. And so what we're seeing is a very sort of silent, invisible because of the media manipulation, invisible move of repression to stifle any sort of social movement in Mexico. At the same time, when we're seeing militarization of the border, a more and more impermeable border, right? And this, I think, is going to drive Mexico to a very explosive situation, because there are no escape valves for a very tense and difficult situation because of neoliberal economic policies that are leaving so many people out of the picture.
Well, they've definitely dropped the gauntlet for the battle for resources. And really, we see this perhaps in Mexico more than any other place in the world, where there's a huge, huge poor and working class, huge resources, an organized left, two organized left, and the United States right at the border. What a story. You're going to keep us posted on this?
Yes, indeed. We're definitely going to keep
Alejandro Reyes. This is Alejandro Reyes. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacific Radio. You're going to come back and be with Francisco Herrera on Flashpoints in Espanol. And we'll have some other guests with you. And in one moment, we're going to be joined by Betita Martinez, and we're going to be talking about sort of getting a little update through the Supreme Court on 500 years of Chicano history. Stay with us. This is Francisco Herrera. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Francisco Herrera, Dennis Bernstein here. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We are live here from the Mission.
The Mission District, San Francisco.
From the Mission District, eye level with the people at New College of California. We love to keep the community inside of community radio, Francisco. That's why it's a privilege to be here in this very special San Francisco community, broadcasting to the world from here. And now we have an honored guest only.
Straight out of the Mission District community, Betita Elizabeth Martinez, author of the famous 500 Years of Chicano and Chicana History, to speak to us about the continuation of struggle for civil rights and human rights. Betita, are you with us?
Sí, como no. Aquí estamos. No, I'm right here. Thank you.
Órale, pues.
Muchas gracias.
And in commemorating the struggle of the independence of Latin American countries, mm-hmm. you actually have a news for us about the U.S. Supreme Court, which is slowly becoming more and more of a Latin American country itself, right? On both the good side and the bad side. I mean, we have the Bush administration, which has been the best student of the PRI that dominated the Mexican politics for many years with their corrupt election strategies and many, many other corruption schemes. But Betita, tell us a little bit what you've been working on with this decision of the Supreme Court.
A little bit earlier this summer, this year, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision in a case called Seattle, Washington, versus schools, and that's where the case was brought. Okay. The way they decided the case fundamentally says that race and racism cannot be considered in the desegregation of schools. Okay. So you're just supposed to forget that and everything's hunky-dory. And this ruling is an incredible, incredible blow, because it just undoes everything that people, you know, that I know and you know, have been working on for years and years and years to make sure that the schools are not, you know, just set up to suit white students and all white schools. But this ruling is incredible, and it's a result of the Supreme Court being loaded with Bush appointments. It's a right-wing Supreme Court now, which it was not always. Not 20 years ago. So I think we really need to be watching the Supreme Court in general, because it's going to come up with some bad ones all over the place. And this one is particularly bad. And so say more about that if you like.
Please, we would love you to say more about that and your sort of worst fears and concerns about where this has taken us.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, you know, this decision really undoes the 1954 Supreme Court decision, which started the desegregation process and said that, you know, it was not constitutional to segregate. But this undoes it by saying, well, you can't think about race. But that was, if we can't think about race, then what can we think about in an age when fighting racism continues to be a major struggle? But these right-wing appointments, well, they say it's no problem. Okay, they're saying if fighting racism means considering race, well, we'll forget it. We just can't be bothered with that. And some of the statements they made are along those lines. You know, they tell us, quote, from this decision, we have to explore, quote, race-neutral options to integrate our schools before we can consider race itself. So as this article I'm looking at right now says, it's kind of like organizing a lung cancer prevention program without saying anything about smoking. I mean, it's sort of like, hey, you know, where are we at here? And so there's all kinds of reasons why this is bad. One-sixth of the nation's black children attend what's been called apartheid schools that are plagued by poverty, you know, limited resources, social chaos, and health problems. And the segregated minority schools have more teachers without credentials who teach subjects in which they're not certified. The list goes on and on. The students in these schools tend to perform less well on achievement tests and are less likely to graduate from high school. These research shows that school integration is a necessary equalizer. But instead, you know, this new Supreme Court decision says we're just going to have to make do. We can create schools without considering race. It just goes on and on. And I think we can worry about more decisions like this coming down in other areas. For example, and there is another one already concerning gender, women, sexism, which is a ruling that I don't have the details of in front of me, but it's something along the lines of that if women who think that they have been treated unfairly in the workplace, and whatever salaries, you know, something, they, if they don't file a complaint within 187 days, they can forget it. It's something along those crazy lines. And if I'm off a couple points, forgive me, but the point is, it's anti-women, anti-the equality of women. So that's another, you know, thing the Supreme Court has done.
Thank you, Betita, on that one. And I know we will be having you for more communication on these issues, and I know you're preparing a statement. I think, Dennis, you have a question that moves us a little bit to Latin America as we approach the 15 de septiembre.
And we know that you're going to join us. Hopefully you're going to join us later to talk about this in Espanol. But let me ask you, I want to get your sort of response. I just want to focus you on the recent presidential elections in Guatemala, where one of the candidates was Rigoberta Menchú. And which is, historically speaking, I mean, they're saying that she took six, and then you've got the general and the sort of the right of left or so whatever. Mm. And if the general wins, he'll win, and if he loses, he'll kill the other one and win. But you know, the idea in that election where you've got Rigoberta Menchú and such an extraordinary situation and a slaughter in the process.
Yeah. Well, Guatemala's had such a long struggle, you know, ever since the United States, you know, kicked out the one really good president had in, what was it, 54, I think?
53, yeah.
It's really been a struggle since then. It goes on and on and on. Things seem to pick up from time to time. I went there some years ago when the first civilian president was elected, and people were sort of celebrating, but that didn't improve things that much either. And today, the struggle goes on, and Rigoberta Menchú is certainly a figure who represents, you know, how that struggle has gone on and on and on, and the importance of it and the justice of it. So what can I say except that there's hope. One of these days, Guatemala and the people from Guatemala get what they deserve, which is a land of peace and justice.
Well, thank you very, very much, Betita, and we'll be talking with you in a few minutes again in Flashpoints in Español. And thank you for joining us
for
this segment.
Con mucho gusto. Andale. A ver, andale.
Adios.
Oh, freedom.
Freedom.
Oh, freedom.
Freedom.
Oh, freedom over me. And before be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. And I'll fight for my rights to be free. No injustice,
justice,
no injustice,
justice,
no.
Those are the voices of Bukani Mawetu, Bukani Mawetu, and the San Francisco Labor Chorus, Bay Area Labor Heritage Rocking Solidarity Chorus. If we can have our two directors please come to the microphone for a short interview. Welcome, Andrea and Pat.
Gracias.
And bienvenidos. Gracias.
Welcome.
Tell us your full names and tell us a little bit about this wonderful trip to this treasure of a place called the Highlander Center that many, many people in this country don't know about and need to know about, should be in every single history
book. I want to go back forever.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Andrea, Andrea Turner, and I'm going to defer to Pat because she had the vision, the dream, and she helped to bring us all together. So, Pat, go right ahead. Take
Orale.
It. Orale.
Well, I'm Pat Wynn, and I did have a dream about a year ago to take these choruses to Highlander because we were presenting a performance piece about Highlander, and how awesome to think to do it right there. Well, it was. It was like Muslims going to Mecca, yeah, yeah, or Catholics going to Lourdes. It was progressives going to Highlander. And not for a moment.
I was going to say Jews on the Lower East Side going to get a bagel.
Not for a moment were we kosher. Disappointed. We were not disappointed.
That's great.
Because Highlander is a sacred place.
Yeah.
It's a place that all through its 75 years has tried to empower people to make changes, to train them to be union organizers, to train them to go out and teach African Americans to read so they could vote. Yeah. To
most train
people.
Them to go limp,
yeah,
during
exactly.
demonstrations.
Yes.
Most
how to be pacifist.
Most people don't
on
know.
The line.
Most people don't know Rosa Parks trained there.
Yes,
and Martin
sure.
Luther King.
Martin Luther King. I trained there as
yeah.
well.
And it's right, Andrea.
You trained there. What does it mean to train there?
At the
well, I was there during the civil rights movement, the mid part of the 60s, and I went there to learn how to. Let the police and everybody beat on you, hit on you, spit on you. And then coming out of Philadelphia, Quaker background, how to be a pacifist on the line while still standing up for your rights. And that's what we need today, is to stand up for our rights and to speak out and to move. Get others to move. And that's what they taught us. And we learned it through song, actions, movement. And we loved it while we were there. I just had to put that in there.
And commitment.
Yes.
And where does... Tell us about what that kind of training and sort of what commitment to a cause means to you and how Highlander helps.
It means I'm 63 and still marching and demonstrating on the line.
Yeah.
It gave me hope. It gave me hope, and if only what I learned from Bernice Regan when she spoke was to that even though we're older now, we do not give up the torch. What we do is turn around, take the torch, and light someone else's fire,
yeah,
and then pass it on. But we still hold that torch, whether you're 199, and that's what it means for me to demonstrate and to learn from the Highlander Center, and we stand on so many shoulders here, and others here could tell you. Vukani Way too felt very honored to be a part of this whole dream and vision put on by Rockin' Solidarity Labor Chorus, and because it's a part of our tradition, South Africa, the same struggle, the same issues, wherever we go. Mexico, I went to school there as well and know how to demonstrate even in Mexico, so, and be beat up by the police, okay? So I know that very well, and this is what we're all about.
The police seem to do this everywhere.
Yes, everywhere.
And as a matter of fact, both choruses, Vukani Mawetu and the Rock and Solidarity Labor Chorus, both take the task of lighting up the flame, the torch, and lifting up the spirit for many organizations, unions, picket lines, or community organizations, and people actually can call both choruses and be in contact and partnership and bring them to start a meeting and an action.
4445009.
So tell us a little.
6483457.
Yeah. We'll get those phone numbers again before we get into the next couple of songs. I think we have space for two more songs. just real quick, give us the number again and how people...
For Vukani Mwetu, yeah. As you know, we're memorializing our director coming up on the 23rd of September. Her name is Fundi, and so we cordially invite the community to come out. We'll be at St. John's in Berkeley coming up. So we're going to invite others to come, singers and everybody who have performed with us, especially at the Coliseum. Area code 510-444-5009. That's for Vukani Mwetu. Please come out and help us celebrate Fundi's memorial celebration.
Sounds wonderful.
Thank you.
Music.
The Rock and Solidarity Chorus meets at City College every Thursday night here in the city, and every other Saturday at Laney College in Oakland. So we are a Bay Area college chorus. And the number is 415-648-3457.
648-3457.
Yes. I've got a little labor medley.
Thank you. A labor medley.
You've got to go down and join the union. You've got to join it for yourself.
That's Bukani Mawetu and the Rockin' Solidarity Labor Chorus from here, San Francisco Bay Area, Laney College and City College, all coming together. Thank you. We have one more song in a little bit, which will be right there in our segment, and maybe we'll do an outro with you guys singing. So, muchas gracias. Thank you very, very much. And we will move from there right into our segment in Spanish, in Español, Flashpoints in Español. And for English speakers, this becomes your segment of Spanish 101, 503, 3511, wherever level of Spanish handling you are at. So thank you very much. And we'll come back with the labor chorus and Vulcani to sing another song in un segundito. Bueno, aquí estamos. Muy bien, bienvenido Alejandro. Entramos a nuestro segmento de Flashpoints en Español con la visita de Alejandro Reyes y Antonio Sánchez, ambos de Radio Zapatista, ambos arduos trabajadores de la comunidad, y nos traen mucha noticia. Alejandro, te fuiste hasta Brasil, ¿verdad? ¿Cómo manejaste el portugués, canijo?
Bueno, es que...
Portuñol.
Tuve chance de vivir allá un rato, entonces pues más o menos...
Ah, no, pues ya lo manejas. Eres trilingüe. Portugués, español y inglés. Bueno,
un poquito de francés.
Un poquito de francés y un poquito de caló también, ¿verdad? Por la frontera aquí, que manejas el Spanglish.
El Spanglish.
Ahí está. Ah, muy bien, felicidades. Oye, cuéntanos un poquito de tu viaje y ahorita vamos a entrar a la plática de lo que estamos viendo que declara la jornada, ¿verdad? Como... que hay verdaderamente una ofensiva contra el zapatismo y contra las comunidades trabajadoras que se ha descubierto. Pero antes de entrar a ese tema, danos un sondeo general de cómo te fue, especialmente por Brasil.
Pues sí, fíjate, estuve principalmente en el noreste de Brasil, en Bahía, y en el centro sur, São Paulo, ¿no? Y bueno, en Bahía, curiosamente, tuve la oportunidad, de pura coincidencia, no fue planeado, de estar presente cuando se estaba presentando un libro sobre el zapatismo en Bahía, donde, bueno, cuando yo vivía allá, éramos tres mexicanos, ¿no?
Andale. Entonces, me suena a película.
Sí.
Tres mexicanos.
Era muy, muy interesante ver el eco que tiene el zapatismo por allá. Y fue presentado por... un periodista, todos brasileños, un periodista, un fotógrafo, que tienen reportajes, etcétera, sobre el zapatismo, desde viajes al inicio del movimiento hasta reflexiones sobre la sexta declaración, etcétera, ¿no? Entonces fue muy interesante. Después nos fuimos a San Pablo, donde pudimos visitar campamentos del MST, del Movimiento Sin Tierra, que es un movimiento sumamente interesante, ¿no? Y muy diferente del zapatismo, que es con lo que hemos estado trabajando todo este tiempo, en el sentido de que el MST sí busca una interlocución con el gobierno, ¿no? Y el zapatismo trata de crear espacios enteramente autónomos del gobierno. Entonces son dos formas de luchar por la tierra y por los derechos, pero de manera completamente diferente. Sí, entonces estuvimos en un campamento, ya es un asentamiento, ¿no?, que pasa por un proceso de ocupación y llega la policía y los agarra palos y los sacan y se vuelven a meter, y mientras eso va negociando, etcétera, hasta que logran establecerse como un asentamiento legal, ¿no?, y empiezan a construir a través de trabajo colectivo, programas de educación, programas de salud, ¿no? Hay unas afinidades con esta cuestión que el zapatista está tratando de hacer, pero de una manera sumamente diferente, ¿no? Entonces, para nosotros fue un aprendizaje muy grande.
Ahora sí que la canción A Desalambrar, ¿verdad?
Exacto.
Porque literalmente entran, desalambran, se toman la tierra, y entonces en lo que se pelea, que si estamos o no estamos, se empieza un proceso de negociación que afecta la calidad de vida de la gente.
Exactamente,
educación,
para
salud,
obtener reconocimiento del gobierno, ¿no? Y fue muy interesante también conocer un ramo más o menos nuevo o reciente del movimiento, que es el movimiento sin techo, que es el lado urbano, digamos, del movimiento sin tierra, donde personas de la calle o de las favelas que no tienen acceso a habitación buscan, con el mismo proceso de ocupación de espacios improductivos o no ocupados, etcétera, para poder establecerse y exigir sus derechos. Y vimos historias extraordinarias de personas que vivían en la calle, personas de organizaciones que trabajan con personas con SIDA, ¿no? Y que se organizan de venir de abajo, de la calle, de no tener absolutamente nada, ¿no?, a recobrar la dignidad como seres humanos y decir, esto soy yo, esto es nuestro, esto es nuestro derecho, y reclamarlo, imponerlo, ¿no?
Así es. Como decimos en el trabajo organizativo comunitario, o organizas dinero o organizas pueblo. Los ricos tienen dinero y lo organizan, ¿verdad?, de una forma que nos afecta negativamente. Nosotros que tenemos nuestros cuerpos, pues nos organizamos, ¿verdad? Tomamos este terreno, tomamos esta tierra. Y algunas entonces estás reflexionando, ¿no?, porque han estado haciendo ahí, bienvenido ahorita a Antonio Sánchez, ¿verdad?, que es también de la Radio Zapatista y ha trabajado con mucho, y ahora está trabajando un proyecto de comida en Oakland. Pero tal vez puedes reflexionar un poquito sobre las diferencias que viste entonces entre el proceso brasileño de organizarse, tomar las tierras y las casas, y lo que decías, cómo has visto la diferencia entre eso y el proyecto, la estrategia zapatista.
Sí, bueno, y además son experiencias que vienen de dos lados sumamente diferentes, ¿no? El proyecto zapatista viene también de una vivencia de 500 años de resistencia indígena, ¿no?, y una ligación con la tierra y con la comunidad muy fuerte, ¿no? Entonces, la posibilidad de establecer territorios muy amplios, sumamente grandes, donde se crea la autonomía. Y bueno, un visitante japonés, zapatista japonés que nos encontramos ahí en Chiapas, nos decía que estaba sumamente sorprendido porque ha estudiado mucho el zapatismo, pero de repente verlo en persona, la extensión territorial tan grande, y que en esa extensión tan inmensa se puedan crear regiones autónomas donde el sistema de educación es completamente autónomo, ya no es una negociación con el gobierno, ¿no? Exigirle al gobierno, bueno, las escuelas que nos dan no sirven, entonces necesitamos mejores escuelas. Decir, bueno, el gobierno nunca nos va a dar escuelas que sirvan, vamos a crear nuestras propias escuelas. Nunca nos va a dar una atención médica como se debe, vamos a crear nuestras propias clínicas y hospitales, y vamos a tener ambulancias, y vamos a tener médicos y quirófanos, etcétera. Esto viniendo de los más pobres entre los pobres, de los más excluidos entre los excluidos, en las regiones más remotas indígenas, ¿no? El gobierno no va a responder a nuestras necesidades, por lo tanto vamos a crear nuevas formas de gobierno nuestras, fundamentadas en nuestra tradición de usos y costumbres. Y hacer esto es un desafío del tamaño del mundo, ¿no?
Sí, verdad.
Y lo que vimos, estuvimos asistiendo al encuentro, segundo encuentro, entre los pueblos zapatistas y los pueblos del mundo, donde vinieron más de 2,000 personas de todo el mundo, de 40 diferentes países, a escuchar la palabra de los zapatistas en tres diferentes regiones zapatistas, ¿no? Fueron 5 días de un encuentro extraordinario donde autoridades de las juntas de buen gobierno, autoridades de los consejos municipales, promotores de salud, promotores de educación, miembros de cooperativas de mujeres, nos hablaron con su palabra y con el español que tenían, ¿no? Nos hablaron sobre estos 14 años, 13 años de construcción de la autonomía, de una manera sumamente íntima, ¿no? No sé, un espacio donde pudimos convivir durante días, intercambiar ideas, además viniendo gente de tantos lugares con tanta experiencia propia en construcciones de realidades alternativas, autónomas, en sus propios países, en su propia realidad. Entonces, estos espacios en territorio zapatista se vuelven unos momentos de intercambio de una experiencia única en el mundo, ¿no?, que está reproduciéndose por todos lados. Para mí esta experiencia del encuentro fue una de las cosas más fuertes que he vivido, y que nos demuestran que a pesar de que el gobierno mexicano hoy está implementando un programa de represión brutal contra todo movimiento social y particularmente contra la autonomía indígena, la resistencia está tomando formas cada vez más creativas y cada vez más visibles, ¿no? Mientras más represión hay, más creativa se vuelve la resistencia.
Y tenemos casos extraordinariamente ridículos, ¿no? Como en la sentencia de hace 2 meses del señor Ignacio del Valle, de San Salvador Atenco, que se le acaba de sentenciar 67 años de prisión por su trabajo comunitario, por se acusa que cerró las puertas de una reunión, ¿no? ¿Cómo estuvo la cosa ahí,
es lo Alejandro? Que uno de los peores crímenes que puede uno cometer en una sociedad capitalista, bueno, con el capitalismo que conocemos hoy en día, es bloquear el acceso del capital. Entonces, una pena terrible es el bloqueo de carreteras, ¿sí? Entonces, el impedir el flujo del capital se castiga con estas penas inmensas, siendo que en realidad esto es un castigo al movimiento, el movimiento de Atengo, que reclama la posesión de las tierras, que impidió el establecimiento de el aeropuerto internacional, que estaría tomando sus tierras, ¿no? Uh-huh. Entonces, ¿cómo? Esto viene una forma de represalia para decir, no vamos a permitir esto. El pueblo organizado, resistiendo la imposición del capital, no lo vamos a permitir, lo vamos a reprimir de manera absolutamente brutal.
Y ahorita vamos a escuchar un poquito más de lo que ha sido esta represión, en un segundito, que nos van a deleitar con una canción muy bonita, el famoso Labor Chorus de San Francisco y Bucani Wawetu, que es un coro que se organizó en la época de la lucha por la liberación de Sudáfrica, de las comunidades sudafricanas. Nos tienen un regalito musical. El coro de San Francisco, coro obrero, Labor Chorus of San Francisco's Rockin' Solidarity y Bucani Mawetu. Muchas gracias. Con los poquitos minutos que nos quedan, Alejandro, se sabe que ha habido una represión brutal. Si nos puedes describir un poquito de eso y qué es lo que la gente puede hacer antes de que terminemos nuestro segmento de Flashpoints en Español.
Bueno, mira, Francisco, la represión en México es generalizada, ¿no? Se está viendo no solo en territorio zapatista, se está viendo muy claramente en territorio zapatista, pero se está viendo por todo el país. Y es una represión que va dirigida sobre todo a movimientos sociales, movimientos que reclaman su autonomía, su autodeterminación, que dicen, no, nosotros no aceptamos lo que está haciendo el gobierno, no aceptamos esta imposición del capital y del gobierno en nuestras realidades. Nosotros reclamamos nuestro derecho a tener una realidad alternativa, ¿sí? No tenemos tiempo para describir toda la gama de formas en que esto se está manifestando en las comunidades zapatistas. Hay un plan muy articulado de gobierno que articula la reforma agraria, diferentes secretarías de gobierno con el ejército, con la policía estatal, con grupos paramilitares y con un programa de echarle mucho dinero a las comunidades campesinas que están opuestas al zapatismo para dividir y para crear conflictos, ¿sí? Esperando que los zapatistas reaccionen de manera violenta para poder mandar al ejército, ¿no? Es todo un plan muy articulado para desestructurarlos, quitarles sus tierras, etcétera. ¿Qué es lo que se puede hacer? Justamente lo que están haciendo ellos y muchos otros movimientos en México, organizarse, ¿no? Organización, responder organizadamente, que el pueblo pueda manifestar su autodeterminación, ¿no? ¿Qué hacen los pueblos zapatistas? Se juntan y con la fuerza de los números, de forma pacífica, enfrentan la represión y no se dan por vencido. Hablamos con ellos, les dijimos, oigan, la situación está bien difícil, ¿no? Dicen, sí, pero no nos ganan. Llevamos 13 años resistiendo, no nos ganan. Estamos pasando por un momento difícil, ya pasamos por uno peor en 98. No, en los 90s no nos van a ganar.
La esperanza profunda y en todo el sector de la comunidad zapatista.
Nuestro oficio es la esperanza, dicen los zapatistas. Fíjense. Eso es lo que nosotros estamos.
Bueno, y un brazo de esa esperanza fue la otra campaña, ¿no?, del año pasado, que sigue teniendo tanto adherentes como organización, donde se pudo ver el contexto, la realidad nacional, ¿verdad? Y de ahí, dentro de precisamente las comunidades de donde viene Ignacio del Valle, que está ahorita encarcelado,
sí,
viene el apoyo a todas ese tipo de comunidades. ¿Qué estamos viendo? ¿Cómo se está manifestando esa esperanza que pudiste observar ahora en este viaje? Un par de ejemplos de esa organización
es
popular a nivel nacional.
La otra campaña propone llevar esa experiencia zapatista de autonomía, de autodeterminación, de resistencia organizada, y llevarla a nivel nacional y llevarla a nivel internacional. O sea, si la solución, según lo han visto los zapatistas en su propia experiencia, es organizarse como pueblo, bueno, ¿qué tal si nos organizamos a nivel nacional, ¿no? Uniendo las fuerzas de todos los de abajo. Entonces, tipo de experiencias, por ejemplo, son las trabajadoras sexuales de Apizaco, de las cuales estábamos hablando en Flashpoints en inglés, que se organizan para resistir la imposición de gobierno, de mafias, de la industria sexual, de mafias de la droga, etcétera, y se organizan, ¿sí? Ellas son adherentes a la otra campaña. Como ellas hay mucho, ¿no? Sí. Y lo interesante es que la otra campaña rompe las fronteras, sí, ¿no? En un momento en que las fronteras se solidifican con vallas de metal y militarización, etcétera, la otra campaña dice, no, nosotros tenemos otra geografía, ¿sí? Okay. Y entonces nosotros aquí de este lado nos sentimos parte de la otra campaña, no porque estemos únicamente luchando por una lucha en México, sino porque las luchas de aquí tienen que ver con la lucha en México, porque las fronteras no existen, ¿sí? Lo que nosotros hacemos aquí tiene que ver con lo de allá, aunque nos digan lo contrario.
Y en los 45 segundos que nos quedan, Antonio Sánchez, que también vas a ser parte del colectivo aquí del Flashpoints en español, tú subiste con la comunidad Cucapá, ¿por qué no nos dices unos cuántos segundos de esa realidad?
Sí, parece ser buenas tardes o buenas noches, como sea. En esta experiencia con los Cucapás fue muy interesante, porque precisamente lo que está diciendo Alejandro, ¿no?, que se rompen las fronteras con la otra campaña. En este caso, muchas personas, mucha gente que están adherentes a la otra campaña aquí en California, especialmente de California, tuvimos la oportunidad de estar conviviendo y apoyando la resistencia del pueblo Cucapá ahí en esos meses, y creo que fue algo, fue algo histórico, la venta y todo de los pescados.
Esa es en la línea de la frontera California-Baja California, y vamos a escuchar más de eso en el futuro. Muchas gracias, Alejandro, muchas gracias, Antonio, por acompañarnos, y seguiremos la semana entrante. Muchas gracias.
And that does wrap it up for another edition of Flashpoints in Espanol and Flashpoints. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Thank you, Francisco, Nora, Miguel, Gavilan Molina, Miguel Guerrero, Mike Biggs at KPFA Controls, New College of California, the Labor Chorus, and their sister chorus. Thank you all for joining us on Flashpoints. Bye-bye.
Palomita, palomita, que vagas por la ciudad. Ve, diles a mis hermanos de la pena y la maldad que se vive acá en el norte. Si vienen a trabajar, palomita, palomita. Vive gente bajo puentes, debajo de las carreteras, y si acaso...
The Wisdom Festival is a two-day conference and exhibition about global and transformative wisdom. There is a great lineup of local and global presenters, exhibits, art, food, and conversation about the emerging wisdom culture. The Wisdom Festival is being held on September 15th and 16th, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. This event is a benefit for the Foundation of World Awakening. Tickets are $39 for one day and $59 for 2 days. Go to www.wisdomfestival.com or call 1-800-367-5777.
You're tuned to listener-supported KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno.